You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe Podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastion.
Are you looking to get a puppy now, or is this something you've been thinking about for a while? And if the answer is, no, right now because I'm home, you may want to rethink that that decision. And then the other thing I think is important to bring up is, what are the goals that you're going to have for that puppy? So if, you know, you're a sporting dog person and you're thinking about getting a new puppy because, you know, you really want to do field work with it, or you're thinking about getting a performance dog and you really want to do agility or, you know, rally or obedience, you have to also think about the foundation that you need to lay for each of those. And can you really do that now? And that goes back to our socialization conversation. I know a lot of the resources we would normally rely on for you in your sporting dog world, it's a lot of the meetups and things of that nature, are just not happening right now.
Hey, Bird Dog Babes. My name is Courtney Bastion, and I am obsessed with all things bird dogs. And I'm here with you to share the stories, experiences, knowledge, and opinions from the women and a few guys in the industry that are killing it. I'm a Wisconsin girl living in a Montana world. I'm mom and two incredible kiddos, wife and occasional assistant to a pro gun dog trainer, traveling the U.S. talking about canine nutrition while hunting, breeding, and competing with my German wire hair pointers and Bronco Italianos. As someone who started hunting later in life because I wanted to give my dogs the opportunity to do what they were bred to do, I'm here to help inspire, educate, and connect women to get their bird dogs out in the field and experience a bond like no other. So pour yourself a glass of wine and get ready to be challenged and encouraged while you learn. This is the Bird Dog Babe Podcast. Hey everyone, today we are talking to Brenda Belmonte, owner and trainer at Two Paws Up Training. This is such an important episode to not only listen to, but also share with anyone you know that is either getting a new puppy, has recently added one to their household, or for breeders that are planning litters. With all the craziness due to COVID-19, we're trying to find ways to socialize our puppies. As a breeder, I always suggest our new owners get their puppies into a socialization course shortly after they go to their new homes. And as an owner, we know how important it is to get our puppies around all sorts of sights, sounds, and experiences. Some of you are in lockdown right now, and if we do nothing, we may not realize the negative impact to our puppies during this critical growth and fear period in their life until later. Brenda presents us with some alternative options and how she has been able to make a pivot in her dog training business to help serve clients and get their dogs and puppies advice and training. I'm a big advocate that there's more than one way to train a dog, and Brenda shares some new and refreshing approaches. Check out the show notes for links to her training business and discover the different options she has available for you and your dogs. Let's get after it. Thank you to our sponsor, Dakota 283, unparalleled protection for traveling to and from your favorite hunting spot. Dakota 283 kennels are a premium quality Rhone mold with recessed handles on top for convenient and safe tie down. It makes it easy to lift up into the truck. I love the secure door frame with high security locks, so I know my dogs are safe when I need to stop for fuel. An added bonus are the drain holes in the back, which make cleaning a breeze when your dog has been run hard and put away wet. Head over to Dakota283.com and enter promo code BIRDDOGBABE for a 10% discount to all my listeners. Okay, today we are talking with Brenda Belmonte. How are you doing, Brenda?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing good. It's a beautiful morning in Montana. How are things going in Illinois?
Well, it actually was a snowy morning in Illinois, and there was a 60-car pile up on one of our major expressways early this morning. So our weather can't make up its mind, so whether it's going to be spring, summer, winter, or fall.
So typical. So Brenda, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing right now.
Sure. So I am a certified professional dog trainer. I own my own dog training business, and I've been instructing others on the training realm for over 3 decades, if you can believe that. We do everything from puppy socialization classes all the way through competition obedience, sport classes. My specialty is actually reactivity and aggression. So I spend the majority of my time working with people whose dogs either, you know, react to other dogs or things in the environment, or that actually have aggression problems, bite cases and the like. So that's a little bit about what my background is. I spent 29 years in a vet clinic, so I've got some veterinary background there as well as their practice mm-hmm. manager. So I bring that to the table to my students as well.
Nice. Nice mix of things. You have all the experience of seeing some of the issues that are popping up in the vet clinic office too.
Yes. And, you know, medical aspects impact behavior. So I think it's important if we're, you know, if we're discussing behavior or we're looking at how to create good behavior, we also realize that there can be some things that we don't think about on that side that impact behavior. So mm-hmm. I think that brings a nice platform, you know, to help people with.
Right. And your training business that you have right now, that the name of that is Two Paws Up?
Yep, Two Paws Up Dog Training, correct.
Okay. So a reason I wanted to have you on here today is with everything that's going on with COVID-19, people are getting new puppies. The demand is crazy. I know we're having a litter here in a couple of weeks, and the amount of puppy inquiries I'm getting is absolutely out of the norm. And we haven't even been advertising that we have a litter coming. So I'm also hearing a lot of the humane societies are emptying out because people are at home. They have that extra time to be able to raise puppies, spend the time with them. And with that, such an important part of getting a new puppy is the obedience, the structuring. And a lot of times we tell our owners to get them in a puppy socialization class within weeks of them going home. Yeah, even people that know how to train their dogs, just the importance of having that socialization. And so a crucial part of all this is them not being able to do that. And I love when I've just learned through social media what you're doing as a training business that offers these classes. So why don't you dip into that for us and what you've been doing?
Sure. And puppy socialization has a timestamp on it. So I think it is critical that even people who consider themselves seasoned puppy owners recognize the importance of what socialization is. And I think it's important to also understand what the definition of socialization is. And it's not just exposure. So it's not just taking your puppy out in the real world. It's really creating positive experiences. And one of the keys of that is certainly being able to interact and play with other puppies in the first 20 weeks of life. And that's really the timestamp. True socialization is something that is considered to happen before 5 months of age. So with the whole social distancing of humans, and many of us in the dog training industry are shut down right now as non-essential businesses, which many of our students can't believe we're non-essential because they consider us essential. Mm-hmm. Right. We've had to move to a couple of different platforms. So number one, we have moved our puppy puppy classes online. We are doing them through Zoom. We get take the same hour that we would have in the classroom, and the instructor meets with the puppy owners. We have pre-recorded videos of the exercises we would be teaching. And then they have questions and answers, a chance to demonstrate for the instructor. And we've created a closed Facebook group for each of our classes as well, so that we can post the videos as a reference for them. They can post videos of their own work at home, and the instructor can then go ahead and give feedback. So that's one way that we've had to adjust to meet the needs of the new puppy owner. And then most importantly for me, we don't have the ability to do a lot of the normal socialization we would recommend, because places aren't open. People have to social distance. Here in Illinois, we have a stay-at-home order. So, you know, we're really not supposed to be out and about. So I created an online free class through my e-learning academy called Socialization 101. And it talks about socialization as a whole, but then it has specific things that new puppy owners can do at home right now during the COVID-19 crisis to somewhat replicate what we would be doing during the normal socialization time. And there's a lot of different ways that we can impact puppy socialization at home without even, you know, realizing it, from dressing up in, you know, different outfits, wearing our winter coats, even if it's, you know, not so cold outside, walking around the house in boots. Certainly the face masks are something that is a little bit challenging for puppies. Mm-hmm. I've found that it's been really beneficial for the people who have signed up for it. They don't realize that even though they're stuck at home, that they could really be doing socialization and doing it well.
Right. Right. So are these still going to be like one day a week classes, and what's the length, or how are you working that?
Yeah. So the ones that are our online classes with an instructor, those are 1 hour per week. They meet at the same time each week. And the Zoom, the Facebook groups are available to them, you know, 24/7. So they're still getting the one-on-one support with the instructor, just as if they were in the classroom itself, because obviously our training center isn't open. The e-learning academy is actually a self-paced classroom, so people can sign up and they can do the lessons, you know, as time permits. Certainly there's support through the comments section, and my email is in there as well, so people can reach out to me for support should they find that they have questions or need further support than the education gives.
Okay, and you're doing you're able to provide one-on-ones through this platform as well.
Correct. Yeah, we do private virtual, so they can reach out to me and schedule a private virtual session if they want to do that. And I've been doing that for the last year and a half on the aggression and reactivity side. So it's not something that is new to me. I find that in many cases, it's actually more beneficial to start out doing the virtuals, because I get to see the puppies in the home without the extra pressure of me being there. And we see a different side of puppies when we see them virtually.
Right. And a nice way to be able to work with the aggressive dogs as well.
Yeah, it saves some fingers and toes every once in a while. So
yeah, I'm sure. So for those of us that aren't in Illinois, I don't know what other states are shelter in place right now. I know like Home Depot, you can bring dogs into Home Depot. You can bring dogs into PetSmart. Can we be taking advantage of stuff like that yet?
Yes, I think you can if you're doing it safely. And the one caveat with Home Depot is there are some who are not allowing dogs in. So I always tell my students to make sure that they check with their local, you know, big box retailer to make sure that they are still allowing, you know, dogs to come in, especially Home Depot, Lowe's. Mm-hmm. There's been some changes, you know, in different parts of the country. And if you're going to do that, it's definitely do it right. You know, keep the social distancing, make sure that we're aware of where the other, you know, other people are, especially if they have other dogs. Mm-hmm. And it's really critical if you have a puppy that you're trying to socialize out in public, that we don't allow them to just walk up to any dog that they see there. Not every dog is friendly, and not every dog is used to having an exuberant puppy kind of rushing up into their face. So our recommendation is really not to teach the puppy that every other dog is going to be a new friend, but that every other dog is a good experience and that they should become dog neutral, meaning I can be around you without having the expectation that I'm going to have to go and introduce myself and be friends. And I think people are starting to get that concept with social distancing as well. So you can safely go into, say, your local pet Smart. Make sure you've got lots of cookies with you. And when a new dog, you know, pops up in your puppy's view, you know, then it's time to start getting that puppy's attention back on you, feeding some treats, maybe moving the puppy away and out of sight for a moment, and then popping back into the sight line where they can see that other dog. And you're creating a positive experience or a positive association with the appearance of unfamiliar dogs. And that's really what socialization is. It's creating a positive association, you know, with sights and sounds and surfaces and objects, moving objects. So it's really not just about exposure. And there's lots of other ways in PetSmart you can socialize, even if there are no other dogs in there. You can take them over by the small animal cages and the bird cages. And I know, you know, the sporting dog owner likes to see the puppy perk up when they see the parakeets. And so I think that's, you know, that's an exciting way to, you know, get your puppy used to maybe some of the early movement of what birds are all about. Certainly, we'd like them to ignore rabbits if they're going to go out in the field and they're not hunting rabbits. So, you know, maybe those small animals, you go over and you look at the guinea pig and then you look back at me and get rewarded. And those are really good, you know, tools that you can use as the puppy gets older.
Right. So as far as being a breeder, for those of us that are breeders, we've had to do things a little bit differently with the way that we're advertising, the way that we usually have people come in to meet us, meet our dogs, and, you know, make that relationship there. So what kind of things are you suggesting for breeders to be able to get around doing things a little bit differently?
Yeah, and I think COVID-19, the pandemic, has given people a kind of a different world in general. And of course, you and I both as breeders know that we have to be careful on who we let into our homes anyway. And COVID-19 has just heightened that awareness. So one of the things I think breeders can do is they can use platforms like the Zoom platform or Facebook Messenger. You know, there's lots of different ways that you can have face-to-face screen time with people. It's easy to move your cell phone around so that, you know, potential puppy buyers can see where you have your puppies. They can see, you know, what mom's interactions are with it. Where I would normally have my new puppy buyers or prospective puppy buyers coming over around 4 weeks of age, we really can't do that right now. So I think it's important, if we're, you know, a reputable source, to allow our potential puppy buyers to still have that glimpse into what it looks like, you know, in our homes for how we're raising our puppies. Is our home clean? You know, all the things that we would want them to learn when they would come in person. And I think that's the best way to go about it at this point. course, it's a personal decision whether you're comfortable allowing, you know, somebody that you don't know into your home. If you are, I would follow the recommended guidelines of the CDC and make sure everybody's got masks, and you may want them to, you know, to wear gloves. It's your house, so protect yourself from this as best you can. And the face masks are really to protect people around you. So it's designed to hold in the virus if you are an asymptomatic carrier. So, you know, certainly if I was going to welcome someone into my house, I would definitely require that they're wearing, you know, facial covering, just for my own protection as well as everyone else's. And I think, you know, I think really in that sense, you're going to have to make a decision when it comes time to actually send that puppy to the new home, you know, how you want to handle that transfer, how you're comfortable with it.
Right, right. And I'm just thinking too of making that change. You brought up a point I hadn't thought about before of things that those new owners see when we have them come to the house. And one of the biggest things for us is that they meet the parents and they meet all of our dogs. Right. And also see where they're kept, how they're kept. So it's just beyond, you know, moving the camera from the whelping box, showing the mom puppies in the setup, to be able to showing all of it. Because when we have people come over, we want their hands on the dogs, because we like to explain the difference in coats, a lot of just important breed aspects. So I guess if there's just got to be an interesting way to be able to do this all through Zoom or FaceTime to be able to go through those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you and I had talked before the podcast started about how many of us are not really adept at all of the technology, but we've had to adapt to it very, very quickly. And you can get very creative in how you show things, for example, the different coat types, you know, just by using your fingers and giving a good description of, you know, length and the water repellency and, you know, the length of the actual coat itself, the texture of the coat. So you just have to get creative and provide not only a visual tool for them through, you know, screen sharing or you know, some other platform, but also being able to audibly explain what they're seeing. And there is no substitute for them actually putting their hands on the coat and feeling the texture of a wire hair, for example. But it's the best that we can really do at this particular point in time. And of course, you and I know one of the red flags that we always tell people when they're looking for puppies is you should be able to see at least the mother. You should be able to see the behavior of the other dogs that live, you know, in the breeder's home or you know, that the breeder has at home. And if you can't provide that during this COVID-19 pandemic, it's really, it's a tough decision then for people to make that determination. Are you as I like to say, are you a good witch or a bad witch? So, because it lumps us all really into the same, you know, same category.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, and that just kind of jumps right into what I refer to as the here and now buyer, especially right now. We're getting the inquiries of, I want a puppy now. Do you have them? And if so, how much? And how much, that just, yeah, the priorities are, I want one now, and how much is it? And so what are a couple points that we can touch on today of what people should really be keeping in mind before they're putting the priorities of the right now and how much?
Sure. And this is a great question because Not only are you seeing the increase in inquiries, but my veterinary referral sources are telling me they are right now seeing more puppies than they would normally be seeing at this time of the year because mm-hmm. so many people are home. And they think that this is a great time to add a puppy because the kids are home and, you know, maybe they're right. home from work or they're working from home. And I'm going to tell you, it's not necessarily the best time to get a puppy. I just want to put that out there because this isn't going to last forever. And you have to be thinking about if at the end of April, for example, in Illinois, we may have life going somewhat back to a normal routine, what you're going to do with that puppy at that point in time if, you know, you have to go back to work for 8 or 9 hours. So I think you have to prioritize if you're thinking about getting a puppy right now or you're a breeder who is getting those phone calls. I think you have to ask a couple of questions. And number one is, are you looking to get a puppy now, or is this something you've been thinking about for a while? And if the answer is, oh, you know, no, right now, because I'm home, you may want to rethink that that decision. And then the other thing I think is important to bring up is, what are the goals that you're going to have for that puppy? So if, you know, you're a sporting dog person and you're thinking about getting a new puppy because, you know, you really want to do field work with it, or you're thinking about getting a performance dog and you really want to do agility or, you know, rally or obedience, you have to also think about the foundation that you need to lay for each of those. And can you really do that now? And that goes back to our socialization conversation. I know a lot of the resources we would normally rely on for you in your sporting dog world, it's a lot of the meetups and things of that nature are just not happening right now. So can you provide that really solid foundation that you're going to need for whatever your goals are for that puppy? And the reality is, on the pet side, we're a throwaway society. I'm involved in a local animal shelter here, and we had a litter of puppies come into our program just before this all hit. We had to make the decision to rehome them during COVID. So, you know, we went through that. How do we get these people to the foster home safely? And we've already had one puppy returned after a week because they didn't realize how much time this puppy was going to require. And they're both working mm-hmm. from home. So mm-hmm. you really have to think about, is this the best time, you know, to sell that person this puppy, or if you're looking, is this really the best time for you to get a puppy?
Right. And I think a lot of times with sporting breeds in general, there is a tendency for anxiety because they are bred to be so heightened for the field. And I know we had one incident where a puppy went to a family where the mother was a teacher, and that puppy came to them right when summer had started. So she was home all day, every day with the puppy. It went everywhere. And then when school started was the first time it had seen a crate. So we're talking, what's a summer break? 2 months?
Yeah, 3 months, 2 to 3 months.
Sure. 2 to 3 months. Mm-hmm. And so then we started getting the phone call of, has crate anxiety. and I think, you know, the time right now is going to be probably similar to the teacher syndrome.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Because we're all home.
You know, you hit a really good point. We tend to see a lot of the sporting puppies in our training center. We get a lot of Vizsla. We get a lot of pointers, German Shorthair pointers. We tend to get owners who think that because they they have this desire at some point to go out hunting, maybe once every 2 or 3 years, that that's the right breed for them. And it isn't, frankly. And so they don't do crate training correctly. They don't do crate training the way it really needs to be done. And this is what we're seeing, and this is one of the things we're cautioning people, is that you are going to be gone more frequently when life starts to return to normal. So you've got to lay that foundation for this puppy to spend more time in that crate, to spend less time, you know, playing in the backyard with your children if they're going to go back to school. What's life going to look like for this puppy? And I know crate training for us as instructors is a critical skill set. And if you ask 10 puppy owners if they're using a crate, they will tell you yes. But if you ask them, are you using it correctly, they will still tell you yes. However, the only time they're really using it is when at nighttime, puppy is spending no time in it during the day when the family is home. The puppy is not spending enough time in there when they're gone. And right now, they're not gone anyway. So we want new puppy owners, especially of these really sensitive breeds. The herding breeds are very much like that as well. To make sure they're using their crate properly, feed the puppy in the crate, give them at least one special something to do in that crate at least once or twice a day, where the puppy is shut in there with a frozen Kong or, you know, some sort of chew toy where you can go, you know, take a walk without the puppy. So the puppy's used to being crated. The puppy is getting the experience of the crate being a good thing. And the puppy's also getting the experience of being in there when you are gone. All of those things are critical. You can't just expect a puppy to go into a crate if they haven't spent time and they haven't built that positive association to it. And I think, you know, anybody listening to this podcast or anyone who's, you know, done dog events like you and I have done, Courtney, we're always dumbfounded by people who have dogs with crate anxiety. But it's because, you know, when I have a litter of puppies, from the time they're 6 weeks old, every puppy has its own individual crate. And then we start feeding them in their crates. You know, everybody gets a dog biscuit in each individual crate. And so their acclimation to it and their first experiences with it are positive. And they learn very quickly, hey, this is a safe space for me. Mm-hmm. Not everybody does that.
Right. And so I just want to touch on when you had said using the crate correctly, and you said, so in the crate every night, all night, I mean, I think that there's a lot of importance there because we get excited to have a new puppy to sleep in bed with us.
Yes.
Oh, as do the kids.
We can spend an hour on that topic alone.
Yeah. Yeah. So should we just leave it at, don't do that.
Yeah. Don't do that. So
yeah, they do have to earn their way. And, I mean, okay, we won't get into it.
Because I think both you and I, Courtney, probably have dogs that sleep in bed with us at night.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And I'm not by any means saying dogs should never be allowed in your bed. I'm not in that camp. However, I do have specific rules for when dogs are allowed to make that transition into the bed. And it it's a personal choice. Right. And so there are specific rules. Puppies can't follow those rules. They just are not physically able to do it from, you know, the house training aspect, if nothing else. So,
right. And I think that goes with one of the ways of just putting them in their place in your pack of your house, where establishing yourself as an alpha, that they don't sleep where the alpha sleeps.
Yeah. And I don't teach based on dominance theory. So, dogs are not truly what we would consider a pack animal. I know there's been a lot of discussion on that and a lot of research done. But they are social creatures that follow a social hierarchy, as humans do. Humans are a social species, but we're not a pack animal, and we're not a herd animal. So yes, there are specific, you know, every puppy should have very concrete, specific rules that they must follow. And it's up to the human to decide what those rules are going to be. But it's also critical that they teach the puppy what those rules are in a way that the puppy understands, and that's not scary or painful or intimidating. And that's, you know, that's what we refer to as modern science-based training. And you know, you get into resource guarding when we start to talk about, you know, social hierarchies and dominance. Well, dominance is all about control of resources. Your bed is your resource. You know, the puppy didn't go out and purchase the bed, and the puppy didn't go out and purchase the bedspread. And so you're guarding your own resource, which is your bed. So that puppy has to be invited into that bed. And the puppy has to earn its way into that bed. And so if you look at it from that perspective, it doesn't put a conflict into it, but it makes perfect sense. And if we look at one of my rules for a dog joining the owner in bed is it has to let you in the bed, and it has to let your spouse or significant other in the bed. If you put your puppy up in the bed or your dog up in the bed and you climb into bed and your spouse or significant other goes to climb in the bed and suddenly there's a growl, snap, snarl, well, that's a violation of the rules. You're no longer allowed in the bed. Mm-hmm. It's my bed, and my spouse is allowed in the bed as well. And I think, you know, again, puppies haven't learned that concrete pathway yet. So, you know, we need to recognize how to set these puppies up for success. And if you're going to put them in the bed with you right now, but then you're going to start to go back to work and 9 hours of sleep is really critical, that's a huge transition for that puppy to go from sleeping in your bed with, you know, a nice, warm, cuddly individual in that social hierarchy to sleeping alone in a crate somewhere else in another room. And sure, it's going to be anxiety producing. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a breed that's predisposed to, you know, some of these anxious moments anyway, that's a recipe for disaster for everybody.
For sure. Okay, so let's talk about people that are getting puppies right now.
Yeah.
What is a good decision for them as far as dogs that they might already have? Mm-hmm. If this is good, if the puppy's going to be coming into a multiple dog family, or if they're coming into one where there's one other dog that's a senior, what should they maybe have preference on looking for as far as the sex of the puppy to
sure.
start with?
To start with, because I deal with aggression and dog household aggression is one of the hardest problems to solve. And it's very, very difficult to live with. So my preference is always, and my recommendation is always, to go with the opposite sex of the dog who's already currently living in the household. I think it just sets it up for less challenges. I am not a huge fan of male households, typically. I'm even a lesser fan of female households, typically, because those have been, by and large, the most difficult cases to solve. And I know there are other people who deal with behavior and aggression that agree with me on that point. And I'm not saying you can't have, you know, two females in a household that don't get along, and you can't have two males in a household that don't get along. It's just that those same sex problems, if they arise, they tend to be more difficult to solve. So I'm always a big fan of having, you know, two of the opposite sex in a household. Okay. And people always ask me, you know, does it make a difference if, you know, one is intact and one isn't?
Right. That.
Yeah. And this is where, you know, research has given us new information. We used to believe, and the recommendation used to be, if you have, you know, any form of aggression and you've got any intact animal in the household, you know, go ahead and spay and neuter. That's going to help your problem. There's new research that indicates that that's not necessarily true. And in many cases, one intact dog and one altered dog can actually be more problematic than if they were both intact. So, or if they were both neutered. So I think when we talk about altering as a behavioral remedy, you have to be very careful with what you're trying to remedy before you make that determination. If you've got urine marking, neutering a male dog, you know, will help because of the reduction in testosterone. But if you've got, you know, a neutered male and you bring another neutered male into the household, those two are not always going to have more conflict-based issues than if they were both neutered. So I no longer make that recommendation unless there are some other reasons. I believe hormones are a part of whatever conflict is happening.
Okay.
Now, obviously, if we've got an unneutered male and an unneutered female, that's a little different because we don't want any oopses.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, that begs the discussion of what, you know, what that is all about. And of course, you know, Courtney, you know as well as I do that there are new surgical procedures that do allow the hormonal capabilities of both males and females, but take care of the reproductive status. So, you know, there are those options as well.
Right. What about the proper way to introduce a puppy to your other dogs in the house? Talk about location. When you first start driving into the driveway with that new puppy, how are we going to do this?
Yeah. And there's, I think the biggest mistake people make is just allowing this puppy to rush right up to the resident dog or allowing the resident dog to just bum rush this puppy on its own property. What we have to remember is when we bring a new puppy home, it's a very, very stressful event. And it's particularly important if you have a senior dog at home, or if you have a dog that has any orthopedic or medical challenges, that we do the introduction correctly. So our recommendation is to do it slowly over, say, a 6 or 8 day period or longer. It, you know, it really is going to depend on several different factors, but one of the best ways you can actually introduce them is to bring the puppy into the area where the resident dog eliminates. So if you've got a backyard, let the puppy do some free exploration in the backyard. Let the puppy urinate. They typically have to after you bring them home in that car ride. And then put the puppy away, put it into a crate, put it back into the car, and then take your resident dog out and let them freely explore where that puppy has been and especially where that puppy has urinated. And as weird as that sounds for someone who isn't a dog person, that is one of the best ways you can introduce two dogs without actually having the face-to-face introduction is through the use of scent. And then we recommend having a predetermined location in the home where you're going to create a safe space for that puppy. So our recommendation is usually some sort of an exercise pen or, you know, a playpen where we can safely put that puppy. The resident dog can see the puppy. They can smell the puppy through the, you know, through the sides of the pen. But the resident dog is still allowed to freely move about the house. What it does is it keeps both of them from being put in a situation where there is too much introduction too fast at a level or a speed that either the puppy or the adult dog can't handle. And then when we do introduce the puppy to the adult dog without that physical barrier, it's always best to potentially do it in a larger space like a backyard. And we do it through the use of long lines, and we allow the puppies to freely explore, the dog to freely explore. And by then, we've hopefully created a little bit of a name game recall response with the puppy. So if we feel there's stress mounting for either puppy, we can call, or for either, you know, dog in that situation, we can call them away. When our clients do it that way, it goes very, very well. And we find that that 7-day window can be really much shorter than that, unless we have a senior dog or, you know, a dog with an orthopedic challenge, and we may lengthen it out just because we want to keep the adult dog comfortable.
Right. Are you putting long lines on the puppy both and the resident dog?
Yeah.
And
then I think it's
you
a
always
good
have
idea.
At least two people out
two
there.
People.
So one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I just heard the term puppy wrangler earlier today in a webinar. And I love that because that's truly what we are at that point. Most puppies want to introduce themselves to the resident dog, and not every adult dog is good about that sort of rush in moment. And so I think it's always good to have a safety net on both ends where you can call either dog away. We don't want to put pressure on the leashes. So we don't want to pull the dogs back. But we do want them to be able to sniff each other and then disengage from each other very quickly. Follow, disengage, follow, disengage, follow, disengage. And space is critical. You don't want to make that introduction, you know, in a hallway where either the adult dog can't get away or the puppy can't get away if the adult dog says, "Hey, Junior, back off." And I like to use the reference with senior dogs. Think of your grandmother, you know, who's walking with a cane and is a little bit unsteady, and your 2-year-old toddler. You know, they love grandma, but you have to be really careful in how they run up and hug grandma's legs, or grandma's going to fall over. And it's really the same thing with, you know, with a puppy. You don't want your toddler rushing in and knocking grandma over, and you also don't want the toddler hitting grandma with the toys. So you really have to protect the senior dog in some ways with some puppies. So having an understanding for body language can really help.
Okay. So one of the important things to first be teaching that puppy in that first week that it's at your house is to a good recall then to be able to help that disengage portion when you're doing the introduction, because you want the focus to come on you.
Yes. And I'm a huge believer in two separate behaviors. And when I teach, especially to new puppy students, I don't teach initially the common behaviors most owners think of. So I don't teach sit. Sit to me, I can add that later on. I don't teach down. I can do that later on. They're really good skills. Puppies need them. Don't get me wrong. But I teach focus and follow. So those two skill sets. I want a puppy to follow me wherever I go, even if I have other, you know, dogs in the household, because if a puppy is willing to follow you, your recalls become much easier. And you're not going to be able to get that follow if you can't get focus. So I spend a lot of time just working on what we call the name game. And I spend a lot of time working on just eye contact or reorientation, those two skill sets. Okay. And I spend really the first week that a puppy joins my household just working on those behaviors. And you'd be amazed, especially down the road, when you are working these dogs, you know, either in performance or in the field, you're not going to dummy down, you know, hereditary behaviors. You know, you're not going to have a bird dog that it doesn't want to look for birds because they're too busy looking at you. That's hereditary. But you do have a dog who understands how cooperation works. And it's much easier to train these dogs because cooperation is already there. You don't have this dog that's just off doing his own thing. So
yeah, you just took that thought right from me. You said it because when you're saying teach it to follow, I keep thinking in my head is no, I want a dog that's independent. I want one that's going out there, you know, that has that drive, that's finding the birds and isn't going to be on my boots when we're hunting. So
right.
Are you saying that this is not going to be a crossover with that then?
Yeah. In my experience, I have not seen that happen. If the dog has good skills that are bred into it, and certainly, you know, your dogs are the perfect example of that. They've got the drive. They've got the determination. You are not going to get the dog that then turns that off because you have a cookie in your pocket. And the big thing that you want is a dog that can be independent. And independence for most puppies is something we create through teaching good socialization and learning and confidence. So it's very strange to find an independent dog that is fearful, for example. Most fearful dogs are not going to be independent. They're going to be too afraid to be independent. So you build that confidence up. And by building that cooperative relationship, it allows you to really build that dog's confidence. And, you know, I have a performance dog, albeit not a bird dog, but she does great doing, you know, agility and learning to move away from me, even though in the rally world, in the obedience world, she sticks to me like glue. So independence is created from confidence, and confidence is created from that relationship and allowing the dog to explore on its own and being comfortable enough to explore on its own.
Okay.
So I have not found that to be the case. When I have seen bird dogs, for example, Vishlas come to mind because we see a lot of Vishla, that are hesitant to move away from the owner, it isn't because the owner has spent so much time working on focus. It's because they didn't build the confidence and the dog is too afraid to move away from the owner.
Okay.
Think about how much time you spend building your puppy's confidence and doing it that way.
Okay.
So it's a different way to look at it.
Right. Let's touch on the person that wants to get two puppies at the same time, whether it be from the same litter or different litters.
Litter mate syndrome, we call it.
Yeah,
bad idea. I call it double trouble. you know, we see this all the time. And when someone approaches me and says, I'm thinking about getting two puppies at the same time, what are your thoughts? I run a question by them. Why do you want two puppies? Mm-hmm. And the answer that we typically hear is because I want them to have a buddy, or I want them to have a brother or a sister, or I want them to have a playmate. All three of those are the wrong answer, because what that tells me is you are getting one puppy because you want a puppy in your life, but you don't have time to do what it's going to take care of the needs of that puppy. So you're going to get a second puppy as a surrogate for you for companionship and for attention. And that is true. That is going to happen. But if you don't separate those puppies and you don't spend individual time working on skill sets for both puppies individually, what you wind up with is one puppy that has two heads, eight legs, and two tails. And house training two puppies at the same time is exceptionally difficult. House training one puppy can be tough for most people. House training two puppies is a whole different ballgame because of the activity level of both. Right. So we strongly caution against it. And we strongly encourage people to think twice about doing it. And we are going to really, really be on those people if they do adopt two puppies at the same time, whether they're from the same litter or not. Two crates, you know, two separate pen areas where the puppies can spend independent time away from each other. Two separate different training times so that you're working with one puppy at this time, you're working with the other puppy at this time, and teach each puppy individually and then bring them together for some playtime and then separate them again. Mm-hmm. And most people don't realize how difficult that is.
Right. So, and I've seen it several times, dogs that have come to us for training, and actually even one where the breeder kept a puppy and it was just never separated from the mother. So six yes. months old, it comes for training and didn't even know its own name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And and I had said, did you take it to puppy classes? Yes. We brought the mother along too.
Oh Lord.
She liked to watch. Yeah. So it's that too, you know, that we as breeders need to remember the importance of separating.
Yeah. And think about what you just said, right? Because this puppy has never been independent.
Mm-hmm.
This puppy doesn't have any confidence. And so, you know, even though it may be a sporting breed, it's not confident to move out and go explore on its own, not because there was a teaching moment of focus, but because it never learned to be independent and confident on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a big difference between, you know, independence and confidence and focus. And you know, anytime you allow a dog to have its primary social bond with another dog, whether it's another puppy that you have at the same time, or an adult dog in your household, or you know, the mother, if that's, you know, from a breeder that you know, it's always going to be much more difficult for either of those two to be separate, but particularly for the puppy. Mm-hmm. So I love it when puppies can go into a household with another, you know, well-balanced adult dog. I think it's fabulous because they're communicating on the same mm-hmm. level all the time. What I don't like is I don't like to see people use that other dog as a babysitter all the time, rely on it to do the teaching all the time, and not form any sort of bond or relationship really, you know, with that puppy.
Right.
That's part for me, when I bring a puppy into my household, that's what it's all about. You know, it's right. about creating that relationship here first. And yes, mm-hmm. you have to get along with the other dogs in my household, but ultimately I'm the one, you know, I want that bond there.
Mm-hmm. We see that same mentality in the field training side as well, where people have the idea that their older dog will teach the younger one how to hunt. So mm-hmm. yeah, it doesn't work that way. They need their individual one-on-one training.
Absolutely. Because they're two completely different dogs. And, right. you know, you will get some modeling after, you know, the adult dog in the household, or some copycat behavior.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean they're going to learn everything that they need to know, you know, whether it's field training or just being a good house dog. I find that they pick up the bad habits more easily than they pick up the good habits. So I don't know if that's true, you know, in your experience with mm-hmm. field training, but
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, they pick up the bad habits first.
So. Yep, they do. And they, a lot of times they'll, with the pointing breeds at least, they'll rush in on the other dog's point.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. Hi, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's bird. I'm on it. Got it.
Yep,
what are you doing just standing there?
Yeah, absolutely. Silly. Yeah. No, that's not what we want.
Back to the multiple dog household. So
yeah.
After we've had that introduction, sometimes it goes smoothly, sometimes it doesn't. How, mm-hmm. you know, are there just some households where the dogs are never gonna mesh?
Yeah, we do see that. I would say we see that most often in situations where we have a resident adult dog and we try to bring in another resident adult dog, usually of the same sex.
Mm-hmm.
I think we tend to see it more often in that scenario than we do with a puppy. However, I have seen scenarios where we have an adult dog in the household as a resident dog. We bring in a puppy and everything goes really well until the puppy matures. And then going back to the whole social hierarchy, the puppy suddenly decides, oh, where I would respect you telling me that's your toy, now I'm feeling a little bit braver. And so I think I'll meet your challenge and maybe I will escalate it. Mm-hmm. So if we have a scenario like that, and we have repetitive battles over resources, that tends to lend itself to a household that will remain in turmoil, or two dogs that eventually just can't even stand each other. Mm-hmm. So we do have to be mindful of, you know, specific resources in a household in a multi-dog situation. I always caution people, and I coach people on high value treats, high value toys, you know, making sure that there's a safe space for everybody so that we don't put them in that conflict situation. And if you have a dog, a resident dog, for example, that you know is always the dog who wants that preferred resource first, whether it's a toy or access to the yard, or they want to be the first one out of the truck, you make sure that you're recognizing that and that you're taking steps to make sure that the other dog in the household can respect that, or that you create a positive association in that moment.
Okay.
Maybe you redirect the older dog as the second dog comes out of the truck, or you redirect the older dog as it's outside by tossing a handful of cookies one direction, and you walk the other dog in the opposite direction to create some space. Mm-hmm. When you get intra-dog aggression in a household, it can be really tough. You know, those are the toughest cases that most of us deal with. Punishment doesn't work. It just creates more problems in that situation. Right.
What are you recommending as a reaction for that? If you're seeing the puppy starting to try to gain its way, pushing the buttons of the other dog, whether it be just a look or a growl, what's something that we can do immediately?
Yeah,
and continuously.
Yeah, so in that immediate moment, the biggest thing that we have is that emotional piece. So we have to push the emotions aside, and what we really have to do is very, very quickly, we have to redirect one or both dogs. Eye contact is usually the big issue. You know, when they make eye contact and then you start to hear that growl, you've got about 2 seconds or 3 seconds to break it off before somebody escalates it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, dogs are good at social signals and that silent communication. And so you may see one dog break it off. In fact, I just posted a video to Facebook of my own dogs in a resource guarding scenario the other night. Mm-hmm. I happen to know that my one dog will back down, so that's why I felt comfortable filming it. Okay. But if this was a dog I didn't know, I would have intervened very quickly, and I would have called the younger dog away, or I would have called the dog who didn't have the resource away in that particular case. She is the younger dog. And so you have to create that separation. You've got to redirect one or both dogs from the situation. Mm-hmm. But then you also in the long term have to recognize that that is a battle you don't want to see happen repeatedly. So you really, from a behavior standpoint, have really only two pathways you can go. You can manage the situation so that you don't put those dogs in that situation again. And, you know, what management looks like, the technical term is antecedent arrangement. You know, what you do is going to be dependent on what the situation is. We could do a whole lecture on that topic as well. Mm-hmm. Or the other thing you can do is you can over time counter condition the response of one or both dogs to that situation. And which one I coach a client to do or both is going to depend on the dogs involved, the client's commitment to changing it, and then you know, the type of situation we're dealing with. How I would handle, say, a dog resource guarding a bone is very different than how I would handle a dog who's resource guarding a doorway, because that's a totally different, it's not a tangible item that I can say, okay, you know, I'm just not going to give you that doorway anymore. Maybe that's right. The doorway where they all go outside. So I'm going to change it just a little bit. But those are really the only two choices we have. So we have to recognize, we do have to recognize, you know, what the situation is, what the resource is, and know the two dogs involved.
So if it's over a bone, are you allowing that dog to have that, or and telling the other dog to just respect it and this is what's going on? Or do you take that bone away from the dog that's resource guarding it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the old school way would be nobody gets to resource guard anything in this household because it's my household and I'm the boss.
Right.
So that's the old thought process. And I know there are still a lot of trainers that believe that, and there are a lot of trainers that still do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say it's wrong, because I could do that in my household. However, the studies have shown us that when we then intervene and create a conflict between us and that particular dog who is resource guarding, we can create more problems down the road. So the way I would handle it is, I'm going to give you a mantra that we use a lot, is it depends. If it is a household where there are children present and I'm worried that someone's going to get into the middle of a scrap, I am basically going to say, you have two choices in that matter. Number one, you don't give that type of bone unless both dogs are separated. Everybody gets that bone when they're all in their crates or when they're in different locations. I would also recommend in most situations that rather than just walk over and take that bone away from that dog, you trade that dog for that bone and then take it away from him so that you have reduced the conflict between those two dogs in that moment. Hmm. Because typically you have a heightened level of arousal on one or both dogs at that point. Right. And by doing that trade, you're going to lower that level of arousal. Our mantra is hands give, they don't take away. So I can exchange that bone for, say, a dog biscuit. Mm-hmm. And so now what I've done is I've redirected that dog. The other side of that is, if I have a young puppy, so let's say I have a 3-month-old puppy or a 4-month-old puppy, and I have a resident dog, an adult dog who is guarding a bone, and that puppy is standing 5 or 6 feet away, and the dog is very appropriate in saying, I am going to, you know, lip lift and give you a little gerbil, and I'm holding that bone, and that puppy doesn't respect it, I'm going to call that puppy away, because that is a communication tool that that puppy needs to learn to read to keep itself safe in the future. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure, I want to make sure that I do that. And I want to make sure that I'm puppy in that moment. You need to respect that. And I'm going to back that dog, that adult dog, up in that moment. If you think about it, if the puppy learns to respect that, we're never going to have a conflict later on. So that's the reason I don't choose to adopt that I am the boss method, because mm-hmm. I want my dogs to respect that communication as they get older. And in the end, I have a much calmer household with those types of resources. And that's why I felt confident I could actually video it, because I knew it wasn't going to escalate, because I know that my dogs have learned to recognize the signals that naturally occur between them.
Right. I like your line of hands give, they don't take. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that actually works really well field-wise, is when you have a dog that doesn't want to bring the bird back to you to be able to have something else to give to them right away, give them reason to come back.
Yeah. And so, and mm-hmm. if you think about dogs in the field, you know, especially when we talk about honoring, there's a respect that has to develop there to honor, you know, the other dog. And so you're creating that same philosophy. You're just using it in a little different situation in the household. And if dogs in their social hierarchy, if you study dogs that are feral dogs, the feral dog populations of the world. They typically live in these loose social hierarchical groups. They intermingle, so they don't truly pack like a wolf pack would do. Mm-hmm. And that's how they learn to respect each other's resources, is mm-hmm. through those communication signals. So I allow those things to happen naturally, and, you know, to a point. I'm not going to allow a resident dog to injure a young puppy, for example. And when I was in the vet clinic, the scenario that we saw most often with severe trauma to young puppies, you know, 13, 14 weeks and younger, were all situations where an adult dog had a valuable resource. There was no supervision, and the adult dog had never learned to communicate through those more subtle tools. So when the puppy approached, they just attacked and injured the puppy severely. So you definitely want some development of those in a multi-dog household.
Right. And something, and I don't know if this happens in your household or if it's just mine, but for those of us that are traveling on the weekends with some dogs, whether it be half of the dogs or one or two, when we bring them back, they're coming back to the house with all these new smells on them. And mm-hmm. it's almost like every time we have to do another reintroduction of everybody.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And when William moved out here a couple of months before the kids and I did, he had half of the dogs in Montana and I had half in Wisconsin, and we had to go through it. It almost seemed like tenfold of the reintroduction of everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where having a space outside can really be beneficial. So you, again, you're not crowding everybody into a small space. You have the ability. How many times have you seen one dog pee and then another dog, you know, runs over to where that elimination has occurred, sniff, 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 and then urinates as well?
Right.
That's communication, right. And that's an introduction. So anytime you can do that, you know, the better. I just had that similar situation not too long ago, because I took one of the dogs to the training center, you know, with me, came back in, and the other two dogs were like, "Where have you been?" And right at the front door, there was this, you know, congruence of dogs. And I said, "Okay, everybody outside." And I just walked everybody out to the back door where they had more space and all of that hyper vigilance to check the other dog out, you know, goes away. So definitely is, it's a critical part of socialization.
It is. And I think, you know, we don't do the long lines anymore as the adult dogs, but the same thing. We just take everybody out because our group is all intact males and females. So everybody just goes out together outside and okay, we're going for a walk. And right. They all go their own direction. But we're fortunate to be able to be in a setting where we can go walk out the back door with a bunch of dogs and not have to worry about, you know, vehicles and other dogs and all that stuff. But it's a constant reintroduction because one of us is going somewhere almost every weekend. So
yeah, absolutely. And you're doing it in a very smart, very natural way for dogs to introduce themselves. And again, if you see any of the research on these, you know, feral dog, you know, populations in large cities like Mexico City, you will actually see that dogs will disperse from the group, do their own thing. And then when they come back in, there's, you know, definitely some olfactory component to, you know, sniffing the rear end, elimination, sniffing the elimination, you know, marking over the top of it. And that's how they learn to communicate. And all of that communication stems from what you allow your puppy to do in those first 5 to 6 months of age, which is why the COVID-19 crisis is going to give us some new challenges, and we're not going to know the ramifications of this until, you know, 6 months out from a dog behavior side. It's something that's going to be fascinating to watch develop.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've certainly shed a great light on some of the options that we have to be able to at least do the best we can. Sure, for what's absolutely. Going on right now. And I really appreciate it. I know you have a busy schedule and appointments all day today. So I really appreciate you fitting me in for this. And
I want to thank you for asking me. It's anytime I can educate, it's huge for me. So I appreciate the opportunity to be on your podcast.
Yeah, you definitely taught me stuff. And like we were just talking before we started, we're both learning addicts. And so when you said you were reading research papers, I 100% believe it. You know your stuff.
At most people, you know, in their time off, they're looking at what romance novel they can do, and I'm coding the internet for more research papers. What does that mean?
No. I know. We're such nerds, Brenda. I love it.
We are.
my whole library of how-tos. My husband's like, so you should be making goat soap by now, and you should be doing this with all the books you have.
Well, I'll be your first goat soap customer because I love goat soap. So,
I actually had to breed my goat to get her in milk to produce goat soap, and then I never actually produced goat soap. So that book's available for anybody that would like it. Oh gosh! So thank you so much, Brenda.
You are welcome.
Tell us how we can find you and get in touch and get your classes on our schedule.
Sure. So we have a website. It's www.2pawsup.com. We're on Facebook, so you can find us the @2pawsupdogtraining. We have an Instagram page, which is @2pawsupd, like David, T like Tom. And we're on Twitter, which is @2pawsup2.
Perfect. And I can put that in our show notes as well for people to make it even easier.
Easier. Yay.
Thank you, Brenda. You're awesome.
You're welcome. Enjoy your day.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. I'm so grateful you chose to hit play today. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with your friends. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. And if you want to show your love and support of this content, become one of my Patreon patrons. As a patron, you receive more discounts, content, are an insider to the Bird Dog Babe community. In addition, 2% goes towards conservation. If you want to learn more about this episode and others, head over to thebirddogbabe.com for show notes and discount codes from our sponsors. And follow me on Instagram @thebirddogbabe. If there's a topic you'd like me to get after, go to my website and fill out the contact form, because this show is for you. Until next time, Bird Dog Babes, keep them versatile.